Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
This week on the Gary House podcast, we've got Harvey Gunn. Mate, thanks for joining me. We've just had some technical issues my end, so thanks for your patience, mate. It was, we were meant to go straight into questions, and it's took me 15 minutes to get this going, but...
It's the nature of the game, isn't it? Thanks for having me.
No worries, mate. First up, I want to hear more about how you became half of Frankie Stu and Harvey Gunn and how that all happened, mate.
We was childhood friends originally. So this must be when we were about 14 or 15, all kind of knocking around in the same group of friends. I was messing around at the time, making music. Always kind of had since a teenager, DJing and making music. I started making more kind of hip hop stuff, and he started. I knew at the time he was with another group of lads making hip hop music, and we got together, made one song, and then that was it. And that was remember us making it in my mum's house and sitting there thinking when we were going to upload it, like, what should we call it? And I was like, I don't want it to be Frankie Stu and then in brackets, like, produced by Harvey Gunn. Yeah. I was like, both of us, like, Frankie Stu and Harvey Gunn. And that was the kind of seminal moment that, you know, cemented, like, coming probably up to 11, 12 years of working with each other now.
I quite like the fact that it's just your names, but do you ever, like, look back and think, shit, that would, like, why didn't we come up with something more like a different name or something? But I personally like it's your names, like, but do you ever look back?
I was actually thinking about this the other day because I was looking at, like, the festival on festival billings, yeah. And it's like, fuck, our name just takes up so much space. So it's a long name. But it's cool. It's what we kind of went with, and yeah, there was never any other kind of other name in contention for it. It was always just our names from the beginning. I think maybe when you're younger, you think it's a bit cool because it's kind of gives your name a bit of something else. But in hindsight, I probably could have had something that rolls off the tongue a bit easier.
Well, you've got quite good surnames for it, I think, haven't you? They don't, like, yeah, you haven't got long surnames or double barrel surnames and anything like
that. The same as you. It's like people always say two syllable first name and then a single syllable last name for a stage name. Gary House, Harvey Gunn.
Yeah.
Britney Spears. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It works, mate. So that's a long time, I guess. Like, how old are you both now?
I am 27 now. So coming on 28. Frankie's 28. My first introduction to music was going to like a youth club when I was probably like 13 or 14. And they used to have decks and that in there. And we used to, all people used to just go in there and spit and DJ. And I started DJing when I was there, but it was like all the vinyls they had, they only had vinyl decks. And they had a big box full of vinyls and it was all drum and bass and like dubstep and jungle. So that's what I originally started making. And then I kind of transitioned over into hip-hop quite a few years later.
That was going to be my next question. It's like, I've listened to your music and, like, I don't know if this is meant to be this way, but I couldn't put my finger on, is it meant to be, is it rap? Is it drum and bass? Is it there's like a bit of everything. Like, is it, there's even like garage in there. I don't know, just from my limited knowledge of music, but is it, you've definitely got a distinctive sound, I think.
Well, no,
Is there a genre, or do you just make what you like, both of you?
Right, yeah, I was going to say, firstly, thanks. I take that kind of thing as a compliment, and we definitely do just try and make what we like. It's hard to kind of, sometimes it's hard when I think the listeners might find it difficult when they can't put things in categories that easily, but we've never tried to pigeonhole ourselves, and we just kind of make what's authentic to us. We've both got such eclectic taste of music that have kind of changed a lot over the years. Like when we were younger, it was all grime, everyone listened to grime, and then it was kind of hip-hop, and then when I got a bit older and we started going out clubbing and that, then it's more like the dance music became a bigger part of our lives. So it's always been super eclectic, and I like to always try and make something a bit different with my production. I think the one thing that I try to carry through always, like, quite UK sounding, quite UK influenced, all of it. Like, yeah, it's been more influenced by UK hip hop, you know, UK garage, like even the drums stuff and the jungle stuff. It's always been, yeah, big kind of UK influence. But other than that, we just get together and make what happens, really, man.
And like the other half of it, Frankie, was he rapping already? Because it's like, well, fate or whatever you want to call it, mate, but it's like, because you don't rap on the tracks, do you? Well, I've not heard you.
Nah. So we work, yeah, exclusively with each other, pretty much. Yeah. There are a few other things along the road, but Frankie was rapping with another group of lads at the time called Concept of Thought. And then me and him started working together, and I think their thing kind of, yeah, slowed down perhaps, or they were all busy with other stuff, and me and Frankie just kind of went in hard on it from quite a young age, and tried to forge our own sound, really, and tried to not kind of like not fit into any of the scenes too much. We're down in Brighton, so you're always a bit disconnected from London and a bit kind of like disconnected from it all, but that allowed us to just get our heads together and just work on a lot of music over the years.
Being in Brighton, I guess you have just influences from all over the place as well. I've only visited, but yeah, you could walk down the street and you've got just such a mixture of cultures and, yeah, just influences everywhere, I guess.
Yeah, mate, definitely. Brighton's a cracking place to grow up as a kid. It was great. I feel like it's more of a, like, it's a big cultural exporter. Like, you have a lot of artists who kind of start here, and then they usually all go on and go and do something else and move up to London or whatever. But at the time when me and Frankie first started, there was a really big UK hip-hop scene in Brighton. There were a few kind of, you know, weekly or monthly nights that would bring crowds down and bring rappers down from further afield. And that kind of dissipated over the years. But when we first started, that was really, really strong.
When I remember, like, I messaged you on Instagram, and it was like, because when I was 13, 14, 15, I had vinyl decks in the house. Yeah. And I remember I'd saved up for months to get them. And even then, I think like my mum had to put half of it towards it, kind of thing. And then it was like going to the record shop. I had to get a bus an hour to the record shop, which kind of thing. I could probably afford 3 records a month or something. So I was like mixing in my mum's old vinyl stuff, and it was a shit show. But at the time, it was like I was just in the bedroom loving it. And then some of the lads and people, we would like, yeah, we'd basically skip school and just play music in my bedroom because my mum was off at work and all that kind of thing. And I was thinking, like, at 13, 14, 15, I was doing that, but I was clueless, yeah? So it was like having to try and learn from, like, reading Mixmag or something like that, really. And yeah, literally just fading one out and another one in when you're, like, some girl singing or something, thinking I was doing all right. So to think that, like, what you two were doing at that age, learning that craft, it's like it must feel... You must feel good knowing that you've took it from that age all the way to now.
Yeah, man. Yeah, it's funny. It sounds like we had, even though we're like so many miles apart, pretty similar youth spent doing that, literally.
Yeah.
Like, and Frankie used to just, we used to go to record stores, but buy like the bargain bins and take them home to try and sample them, like to plug the turntable into the Mac and try and sample them. But and yeah, not only one in every 100 was ever any good. But
yeah,
but yeah, I think, mate, at that age, 13, 14, I was just messing around. Like I dread to hear like what the mixes were like I was doing. But I definitely sparked a real interest in me, and it gave me like, I don't know, it gave me some kind of direction and purpose, I think, to myself, because I'm sure we'll get onto the sport, but I was never never sporty at all at school. I had no interest like in sport, athletics, and everyone I knew was always very, there's a good sports schools in that environment. All of my friends play rugby or football or something. So I felt like when I found music, I kind of found my fit, found my kind of crowd, if you know what I mean. But when I first started, it was definitely an avenue like that. And it just, it's kind of, yeah, if you do something a lot, as you know, with any training, you just get better and better over the years, and you get more confident in your abilities.
That's part of what I was thinking. Like, I came into running relatively late for some people. Like, I was early to mid-20s when I started taking it a bit more serious. And that wasn't, I didn't just think I was going to be a runner. It's just because I couldn't afford the gym, where I'd moved to Manchester kind of thing for work, couldn't afford the gym and all that kind of thing, but wanted to keep fit and just started running down the canals with no clear plan basically. So but I remember thinking, a bit like you said about the music, it was like something clicked, and when I started learning one thing about it, I knew I could learn another thing and another thing. And in school, like, I wasn't thick, but I wasn't applying anything, and didn't really know what I was doing up until I found running. And then that was like an anchor point. It's like, right, I was just learning everything I could, but becoming a little bit obsessive with it. So
yeah.
I was thinking, like, I've been doing that for almost 15 years now. So, and you've been doing probably the same thing, but in the studio, like every day, learning and applying every single day. And like you say, do something for 10 years plus, like, you're going to get good at it, aren't you? Really?
Absolutely. And I think it's true for so many, like, different avenues of life. Like, it's a cliche, but it's true. You know, put those hours in, and, you know, they do mostly pay off. And I'm someone that in previously in life, like, if I didn't feel I was good at something, quite quickly I'd lose interest in it. So I've tried everything, man. I've tried everything, but it's the kind of things that have stood out has been the music and the running. I think two good examples of hard work and time put into it, you can really do a lot. I think, especially with the kind of longer distance endurance running, it's like, you know, it's time in it, rather than ahead of anything else. But I wanted to ask you, whereabouts did you, so you're in North Wales now, and you were in Manchester before. Whereabouts were you before? Where did you grow up?
I grew up in North Wales, but like not very Welsh North Wales. So
yeah, I was going to say, because I couldn't quite place.
Yeah, you know, like on the north coast, it's basically everyone calls you like plastic Scousers or something, because
yeah.
Like an influx of Liverpool and Manchester and everything.
Yeah,
but yeah, it's just a small town called Holywell, and down on the coast essentially.
Yeah. Is it in Holyhead?
No, it's about 30 minutes, 45 minutes from Holyhead. So on that, like, whether you took the train down or drove down that road, it's just off that carriageway to Holyhead on Anglesey.
We ferry from there over to Dublin. Yeah.
Yeah, it's nice ferry out and not so nice coming back in usually.
On the way back, the way out, we thought it was a touch. There was a little cinema on the...
I had that same experience.
We were so tired, so we all slept literally on the floor in the cinema. But on the way back, it was different gravy. It was Good Friday, and there was about 50 school buses of kids all going on their football, like 10-year-olds were going on their football tournaments. So there's about 500 like little kids without their parents, just running riot on this ferry the whole time. We're so chronically sleep deprived from this tour, trying to catch some sleep in the cinema, and they're just running in, screaming at us, like bullying us and that.
Yeah, it's rough. Yeah, it's always, I've done it that trip a few times, and it's always worse coming back for some reason.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, I'm basically 45 minutes that way. That's where I was born, haven't lived there for a long time. Moved to Manchester for work, lived there for a couple of years, and then basically met the missus and we moved back towards North Wales.
Yeah.
So yeah, nearest, like literally, I can be on Snowdon in an hour, like basically halfway up it, or I can be in Manchester city centre in like 50 minutes as well.
Oh, right.
So location wise, that's kind of where I am.
That's what I'm kind of eyeing up for my next, like, I want to move, I think at some point, out of Brighton. Yeah, and I've lived in a few different places over the years, but I've always found myself back here. And I'm trying to pinpoint somewhere that's like a bit of a city, but also close to some mountains, or do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
A bit more into you've got the downs and stuff here, but it's different. You don't quite have the fells and that kind of real wild, you know, geography. So I'm still trying to kind of pinpoint a place.
Manchester was pretty good for that because you could get to the Lake District, but then... Like, here's even better, really, because it's just a bit more rural. Like, there's 200, probably 250 people in my village.
Well, but,
half an hour and you're in Chester, which is it is a city, but it's not big, is it? It's I like it. If I had my way, I'd probably move a little bit further out into the mountains.
So there's zero people in the village.
Funny enough, like my first ultra marathon was London to Brighton. They don't run it anymore. It's like it was like 2009, I think it was. I think it was 56 miles, and it always sticks for me. And just like finishing down the downs and onto Brighton Beach, and with the cobbles, with feet. Then I didn't have a clue what I was doing, and but yeah, it always sticks with me. So I've got a good friend who lives in Brighton as a runner as well, and it always sticks with me, Brighton, just for that experience. It's one of those places, I think. Like, I've been to loads of places, but yeah, I can remember where I ate, I can remember where I sat on a bench and all that kind of thing, just because it was just a fun place to be.
Yeah, man, it's great. And there is a big, it feels like there's a big running community down here, because the Brighton Marathon's a big one, isn't it? Its proximity to the South Downs is so, from my house where I am now, I can jog 25 minutes, 30 minutes, and then you're in the South Downs. Which is beautiful. So I've kind of contradicted everything I was saying about needing to go somewhere where I'm close to the trails. I'm kind of in the perfect spot here now. But yeah, nice. If you get the opportunity, you should get down again. I know there's quite a few. I know there's quite a few ultras, the South Downs ultras and that, which
a few people
of mine have done and said are good. I think pretty.
They are good. My friend runs Centurion Running, so they do like the 50 mile and 100 mile events down on the downs quite a lot. And that old race that I did, it doesn't run anymore, but I think they're restarting it, so they're doing Brighton to London, the opposite direction. I mean, I'd much rather run into Brighton, if I'm honest, than
because otherwise you're starting out in all of the countryside and finishing in the city. It feels a bit
Before I did that, years before that, they used to do it as a road race. So you can imagine what that was probably like, just chaos.
Big time, man.
So when did you, when did you start, when did running come in? Because I know you said you weren't particularly, you weren't into sports or anything like that? Or was it just that music had completely taken over? You didn't have the opportunity? It was just...
You know what? At school, I used to play basketball. I like that. I like the variety of it. But do you know what? I've always preferred, I think music I liked, as a kind of analogy, I love doing something that's kind of only I am responsible for it, if you know what I mean. I like kind of solo projects. I found team sports a bit more difficult because there's so many, factors out of your control. I kind of like the idea of just turning up on your own, and it's you versus yourself. Do you know what I mean? But running, I'd say, I'm just trying to think, 2023 now, I'd say I started running maybe, but in adulthood, I started messing around with running. And I'd say I started running properly or a bit more routinely, probably start of lockdown, I'd say. And I remember having quite a big stretch on it where when I did like a period of time trying to cut back on the partying, and you can kind of see on my, I looked through my back on my Strava log, and I was like, this 3 or 4 months when I was kind of clean on the straight and narrow, of I was running like every day and building fitness, and then it's come the summer and I got back off the wagon, as it were. And then it kind of went on the back burner massively for quite a while again. I'd say really when I first made a real commitment to myself to run properly and to kind of pick it up again would have been at the beginning of 2022. Mm. And that's when I just first kind of went sober and clean for the final time, and I was massively overweight at that time, or I felt I was overweight and I needed to lose some weight. So I just started running because I was physically and mentally unfit, and I knew, if there's something wrong with me, be it in mind, body or spirit, I know there are certain things you've got to keep in check to aid that. And for me, I know exercise is one of them for me.
Did it change did you find it was like changing your energy to a certain extent? And were you frustrated when you took running up a little bit and then like you say, it went by the wayside for a short amount of time before you got yourself cleaned up again? Mm. Were you frustrated in that time, like kicking yourself almost, or was it just natural ups and downs through life?
Mate, I think in that time I had such little, so when I was kind of pretty sober and in quite a bad spate, I'd say I had so little self-awareness. I wasn't even that, like, I think running wasn't something that I was like that concerned with in this grand kind of scheme of things. I knew it was something in the back of my head. I know I should be doing this, I know I should be exercising, but I knew that there were many other obstacles that I had to tackle before I could hone in on that. So it started as something, yeah, to get physically fit, and I was just road running basically, or running even on treadmill, just running any way I could, just to lose weight and to get fit. And because I knew it was good for my head, even though I didn't feel like it didn't massively make me feel better instantly at all. I can't lie and say, like, I think there's a big kind of spiel that gets sold of running, like, go for a run and you all your kind of mental problems will go away. Definitely wasn't like that. I really had to persevere at it. And it was
when you start out, mate, like I was, like when I started taking it a bit more serious, and it was almost by accident taking it serious. It was just that I was doing it more often, like I say, because I couldn't afford to do anything else really. Like I played football. Football was my thing when I was younger, so I thought of myself as quite fit. But I was also, like, I was in Manchester, out drinking and partying 4 nights a week with in that past life, I was working as a hairdresser, trying to make it as a hairdresser. Okay. Yeah. So it's, imagine that lifestyle in Manchester, but then taking up running. So it was hard, and I thought I was quite fit. So from football and stuff, but like the first couple of runs was just crap. So I always think when I hear these stories of people that haven't even had that background and they're chucking themselves into it, like, it must have been 10 times harder those first couple of runs. So I'm always interested in, like, why did you go again and again and again?
Yeah, I think I had a very strong sense of responsibility to myself. Mm. Like, I really have that. You often ask, like, why do you do that, or why do you kind of stick so rigidly to that routine or to those things? I'm kind of like, I just felt like I had to, like, I had a responsibility to myself. If I was, I kind of made a final commitment to myself to try and build a better future and a better body, a stronger body, stronger mind. And I just knew I had to go see through it. I really, like, fell out of love even during this process. I'd say maybe like 9 months into it, I was just so bored of running on concrete, like, of just running on the pavement. I've just it was only until I started going, stepping up resistances slightly and going, eventually venturing out into the trails, which was completely just changed my perspective on it. And I was like, it just felt literally like chalk and cheese running, because it's exercising compared to running. For me, when I get out there into the trails, like it's like a spiritual experience. It's meditative. It's the thing I'm thinking about the least is probably the physical benefits that I get from it. Do you know what I mean? It's just it's like a way of spending time. So it's almost like socializing with myself, mate. Do you know what I mean? It's like doing a hobby with myself. But you know, back to the original question, it's a testament that I was kind of correct in forcing myself to do those things, because it did pay off, and it took a very long time for me to fall in love with it. But yeah, you know, you've got to, things are difficult at first.
And when you when you decided to go sober, was it like, was it a culmination? Was it like you kept thinking you might do it, or was it a like a line in the sand kind of job?
It was a bit of both, really. I think it took me, like, I knew something was very wrong in my life. I knew there was a big problem in my life. I don't think quite at the time I knew exactly what it was. I had, for a long time, a drink and drug problem, and I wanted to, my initial thoughts was to go sober for 3 months, so that with the idea that if I was then to reintroduce drinking again, it wouldn't be something where drink and drugs are linked like this. I wanted to just kind of break that link. And then when I went sober and kind of the 3 months were up, I was like, I think the most insane thing I could possibly do right now is start cracking on again and start reintroducing something into my life after I was starting to reap big rewards from it. Oh, do you know what? Not even rewards, just like... just having some self-awareness, mate, and a moment of clarity in my life. And then I've kind of, discovered a bit more, a more purposeful, meaningful life that I kind of wanted for a long time and didn't know how to achieve. And, you know, exercising, running, you know, pushing myself physically and mentally then became a big part of that. And then I think, it's quite a common theme I find in especially like trail and longer distance running, of like people that are perhaps somewhat obsessive, which I know is a word that you said earlier, like obsessive, addictive. And I'm a very obsessive and very kind of addiction prone person. And I feel like running is something that you can kind of fill that hole somewhat. And if you do it in a responsible way, that's kind of, you know, you're not hammering yourself, as you know it's very possible to do, then it can kind of it gave my life a bit more meaning after I've lost my tangent a little bit here.
Go on, mate.
when I stopped drinking and stopped partying, I feel like I lost a huge part of my identity that was for so long just being a party boy, a good time guy. You know, like that was who I was. And I think when I stopped and I lost that, reconnecting to what I was like when I was a much younger kid, which I mentioned to you earlier, when we were off camera, like I used to love mountain biking out in the forest. I found myself rooting back to these things I enjoyed when I was younger, and I managed to connect to them through trail running and regain a lot of my kind of truer identity of myself that had been buried, I think, through my adulthood.
Yeah, it's like good on you, first of all, mate, because you've done it in, from what I can see, like a brilliant way as well, because I'm always a little bit, like you say, I'm sometimes careful with my words, because a lot of people say, oh, they're addicted to running, or they get addicted to running. Whereas I prefer to say, like, I got a bit obsessive over it. It's not an addiction. Like, I've got friends that have had addictions kind of thing. So I'd be almost like doing them a disservice kind of thing to say I was addicted to running. Like, you probably feel a little bit, but being obsessed with something, I think it can be a good thing. But you're doing it as like, oh, as far as I can see, you're out and you're being out in nature, or you're out for your trail runs, and that is consistent, but it's not it's not like you're not pushing it too much.
I think you hit the nail on the head, mate. I think what I always understood addiction as is like repeated behavior that you know is detrimental to yourself. Do you know what I mean? You're doing something new. I think obsession can be a great thing. I'm obsessed with music. I'm obsessed with kind of, you know, being a better person than I was yesterday. I'm obsessed with running, definitely, like you said. And I think, yeah, as long as that doesn't... I think if you were to use running as a vessel for some kind of negative addiction, then that's a problem that actually probably has nothing to do with running. Do you know what I mean? Mm. But it's definitely, like you just touched on, it's definitely just as much about getting out and spending time in nature as it is the kind of performance side of it. And because I do love that side of it as well. I do love the kind of just the training aspect of it and feeling yourself, getting fitter. I like to kind of keep a healthy balance of the hippie, like out in nature, enjoying it, and then also like the athletic side of it. I try not to get too bogged down in the numbers and you know, all of that stuff, because it's, you know, there's so much of it now. There's so many metrics that you can measure things by that is the kind of stuff that can therefore I could get too sucked into that, so I try and keep that stuff away. And I hear, you know, news preach a lot about that, you know, like even something just like the perceived effort. Do you know what I mean?
I can imagine with your brain you probably see like music as almost like the Matrix kind of thing, so what you almost don't want to do is fall into that data trap of runners and just keep it as you're doing, mate.
Nice. Yeah, so true, man. It's so true. It's the same with music. Like everything is quantified and there's so much data and music so screened. That matrix binary is how I find a lot of that stuff. So, it's a good way to disconnect. I don't even listen to music when I'm out doing like a long trail, and I won't even listen to music unless things get really tough. I'll have headphones on me, like in case I bonk hard. But
that was going to be one of the questions I have, because I get asked about what podcasts do I listen to and stuff like this. And I very rarely listen to a running podcast or like running content, because that's my job a lot of the time. So I'm at the laptop coaching, and then I might listen to a podcast while I'm doing the coaching work. But when I'm out running, I'll listen to music usually, or a podcast or an audio book, but on a completely it might be fiction or something like that.
Yeah.
Whereas like you're coming from a point of view, you could be in a studio all day and then you go for a run. So what do you do? Is it just literally about being outdoors? You won't have music on at all?
If I'll say I'll get out into the trails at least once or twice a week. Yeah. At least once for a long run. All the other days when I'm just kind of training, like it would be at muscular endurance or strength or just easy runs in the city, I will have headphones on. Because I don't like listening to cars and
stuff. Yeah, got you.
But when I get out into the trails, I don't listen to music then. I just love the sound of nothing, of quiet and of like birds and, you know, all of that stuff. I just love the peace and quiet of it, mate.
Often, do you find like when people say like if it that aren't running or they don't go for these runs, a lot of the time I'll get asked by friends and family like what do you think about
hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
And like, I can't answer them if I'm honest a lot of the time, because you're just out there, and then you come back and you're like, well, what were you thinking about for all that time? Nothing. Like, spend enough time thinking when I'm in here.
Mate, it's so true. It's so true. Sometimes, like, I think about like so much, but it's also nothing. Do you know what I mean? It's so, my brain's constantly distilling.
Oh, yeah. All the best ideas and all that kind of thing when you're out there, and it's just gone.
Exactly. Literally that. So, and I love that. I love, like, sometimes when you're feeling on top of the world and the sun's shining, I can have like really nice positive conversations with myself about plans in the future and about what I'm going to do, and everything feels possible. And then other days, you know, when it's really tough, like sometimes I just kind of, I sit back and like let that negative voice in my head just talk, and I just kind of listen to it and like meditate on it a little bit. I don't, I can never think of what I think about. I like to stop. I like to take photos as well. I love doing that. Like when I'm out in the trails, stop, have a little breather, take a few photos. But yeah, it's a long amount of time to kind of spend weekly with yourself. Mm. Just out running. I can get why people would be like, that sounds like
crazy. Like have you tried like meditation and stuff in the past? Because I have, like I've done. Like I had a mentor for a long time that was like big on self-development and stuff. And like, it was what I probably needed at the time to work on myself. But yeah, I struggled with meditation because, you know, like to be fair, this was more guided meditation. So they're walking you through it. But I can't empty, like when people say you just empty your head of thoughts, it's like, I'm just lying there almost like buzzing with thoughts. I'm not meditating. It's like just pointless. And I'm out on the trail for 10, 15 hours a week. I don't need to sit there quiet in a room kind of thing.
100%. I get the complete same. And I reckon a lot of runners that you'd ask would say a similar thing. I feel like people often run because they've got very busy, loud, chattery minds. And that, you know, it's that getting out and doing the exercise that quiets it. I can't really sit down and meditate like that. And I never have. I've tried it quite a few times because I've always known, like, I need something to quiet my mind because my mind's busy. Like, it can get really busy. And I've always tried all the different things, like meditating, CBD, blah, 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 everything. And it's only running really the thing that's, like, been able to actually achieve that. But like I said earlier, it's not to say that every run makes me feel great, man. Like sometimes if you wake up in a bad mood and you go out and run and have a really challenging run, I get home and I'm still in a bad mood and I'm really tired and hungry. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It doesn't always work like that, but it's definitely a force for good on my busy brain for sure.
It's like anything, you've got to look overall, haven't you? If we just went on one run or just... Yeah, if the running dictated your mood every day, like I have to think like that, then I'd be in a shit place with work and everything. It just has to be a constant, whether it's good or bad.
yeah, exactly. It's kind of like how it makes you feel, how you feel about it is kind of irrelevant. You've got to have that kind of, you've got to get it done regardless. But I mean, it's interesting. How do you kind of, what are the, because this is a question I get asked a lot about the music, like how do you find doing something that you love as a job and how does that kind of change it? But I'd like to kind of pose that same question to you. Like, how's your relationship with running changed the more professional it's become in your life?
Yeah, like you say, it definitely changed. And it's only in the last few years I realised how much it's changed because, like I say, I started off running in Manchester down the canals and stuff. And people have heard me tell me this story before, but like that's like I met my now wife, but originally, she was living in Leicester and I was in Manchester, and I entered the Leicester Half Marathon as my first race just so I could go and spend the weekend at her place. Mm-hmm. And it's like the creepiest origin story ever, but like,
oh, sweet man.
But that's how it kind of kicked off, and all these old men beat me and all that kind of thing, and I was just. Like we were saying before, I became obsessive about learning about running because for the first time, like I'd been to school, been to college, didn't really know what I was doing. Like the hairdressing thing was good, but because it was creative, but it was more the social thing that I enjoyed, kind of thing. So yeah, I was just lucky in the fact that I'd found running. I could do it pretty much every day. It didn't cost me anything. And the races I was entering, yeah, I wasn't doing particularly well at the start. And then, but like you said before about what I put in, you were getting out. Yeah, I was getting better and better at this running and the positions were going up. And then I entered the race and did it even better, that kind of thing. Mm. So, and this was before, that was just when I was just running for myself. And then what happened was, it was like, and you might resonate with this, I had this life of going out in Manchester all the time and drinking and partying and all that kind of stuff. But then, like, my Sunday run was starting to, like, the value of that was starting to outweigh the partying. Yeah, so I started to distance myself from that so that I could, I was like, well, I want to run on Saturday, so I'm not going out Friday for a few drinks after work or whatever. So I just started getting better that way.
Yeah.
And it was only after about 2 years I had an opportunity to just basically leave and put a bit of cash into training as a personal trainer. So at that point, I was just a personal trainer, but as a 9-stone runner then, basically.
Yeah,
so I was
attracting
runners. So then all of a sudden, my life was kind of shifting to the group I was in was runners and stuff like this. Like over the years, first 5, probably 10 years, I just wanted to be a better runner and I was competitive with myself more than anything, but there was races I was doing well in. So it was all about basically getting better in the competition and essentially growing my business a bit as well. As I got older and more recently, like now, like the coaching business has to come first along with the family and kids.
Yeah, so, of course.
So like I'm basically, like I've said this before, but I was a runner that coached and now I'm a coach that runs these events when I can and enjoy them. So I love running to the point where I would run twice a day easily, like I said, if I could, if your body would hack it.
Yeah.
And I've always had a really good relationship with running, as in I just love it. Like I speak to a lot of people that like, they run and they might have been running for 10 years, but I can tell they don't particularly enjoy it.
Yeah.
How do I motivate myself every day? And it's like, I don't need motivation or willpower. There's days where I don't want to run and I can't be asked and that kind of stuff. But yeah, it's become so ingrained in me, then that's just what I do.
Yeah. That's a beautiful thing, though, to do something that you truly, as you said, love every day. That is a beautiful thing. And I think it can be such a cornerstone for so many different elements of your life as well. Like when you said about not wanting to go out on the Saturday because you were looking forward to your run on the Sunday, it can it kind of forces better lifestyle choices and behaviors on you because you care about the running, and kind of as a byproduct of it, you're like, it's really showing compassion to yourself as a person. Do you know what I mean? Like even the things that you like, you're thinking, oh, I want to put the running first and not go out, but actually you're doing yourself a big favor as well. But no, it's an interesting story, and I like that it's kind of, it ends on the kind of your story ends on you doing something that you love every day. I don't think you can ask for much more than that, man. That's good stuff. Good,
and I'm always aware of it as well, that like I'm quite privileged to be able to do that. Like it is my job essentially. I'm not a professional runner, but like I get to coach for a living. So yeah, I just do stuff to protect that. So if I don't take on too much work, if I don't have to, kind of thing, because I know I've been in stages where I've had too much work and I've been running too much and I've just been useless as a person, basically. So just no energy, stressed, like just shit with the wife, all the usual stuff.
Yeah.
So I'm still not great at it, but I've just learned to get better at it because I've been like, I'll openly admit I've been really selfish in the past as well. It's like, this is me, this is my running, everyone else has to just fit in with me. Like family changed that, but again, I'm 40 this year and I'm only just getting better at it now. And if I'm honest, I've got a good balance now, and that's only because I can't train as I did like 10 years ago. Just I haven't got the time. But that's what everyone is in that position, whether they've got a 9-to-5, whether they've got other passions. I still think, but for me, running is the anchor. So if I'm fit and healthy and I'm running well, I can guarantee that like relationship at home is going well, my business is going well, when it's not. And I've had if I've gone out, like if I've gone out and I've had too many beers, very rarely I get to the chance now, but I've had, you know, when you experience a 2-3 day hangover, and it's like then you get fucking pissed off that your energy is so low for those days, and it's like I'm not completely sober, but I just had to knock all that on the head because
it's
just not sustainable to do the stuff that you love. Like you say, like you, once you start valuing just going out on the trails, and it might be running, it might be getting on a bike or just hiking or whatever. Having that in place definitely helps. Just happens that I get like to coach it as well.
Yeah. And I think, yeah, it's really interesting the kind of, it's like almost, it's a fine balance. You've got to balance all of spinning all of these plates, and running can be quite a big one. Like you say, it is easy to get a bit selfish with it. Like, no, I have to go out for 5 hours on the Sunday on my own, like, which kind of, if in any other context is probably like, is how acceptable actually is that? But I think it's about balancing them all. And like, for example, I knew coming up to my tour, I was training really hard at the beginning of the year, and I knew as I approached, I'm gonna have to take my foot off the pedal because I'm too tired, I'm too fatigued at the moment. And it's selfish of me if I go into the very physical month of work ragged because I've been pushing myself doing what I love on the trails too much. It's not, it's a bit selfish. So sometimes I do have to make those choices, like, you know, enjoy the running the most when I can. And I do try to be as consistent as it as possible, but there are sometimes when I have to, it can't always come first for me. You know, I have to be able to be prepared to drop it for, you know, when life demands that you've got to go and do something else on a Sunday. But that being said, yeah, I have been able to be pretty consistent. Bar, I had a stretch for my tour and a bit of illness this year, but bar that, it's been pretty good, pretty smooth sailing. But
have you done any events, or do you plan to do any events?
I've got one in September, the 60 km leg of the 13 Valleys Ultra in
up in the Lakes.
Yeah, mate. So I'm really looking forward to that. That's going to be my first ever event of any nature.
Nice. I thought you were going to tell me you were doing the full route then.
No. I mean, I'm pretty. I've ran some of the route already when I was last there, like just for fun. I reckon I've done about half of it. So I've got like, I'm not going to completely blind, but I've got to definitely train hard. It might feel somewhat bit of naivety as that as a first event, but I was entered when I first picked up running again. I entered the Brighton Half because I just felt it would be good to have a goal to get to. And then by the time I had actually done a half marathon on the trails, way ahead of the event, like, what's the point? I'm not looking to go in for like a competitive competitive time. So I just fucked it off and didn't go. But I might try and get something over the summer as well. I'd quite like a marathon distance over the summer, just because I'll probably do it as part of my training anyway. But yeah, that's the only one in at the moment, which I'm really looking forward to. I love being up in the lakes. It's second to none for me. I think it's the end of September, so it could either be like the most beautiful kind of transition of the season, summer into autumn weather, or it could be
horrendous.
Be absolutely horrendous. But yeah, no, we'll see. What about yourself? What have you got? Anything in the pipeline? Or you got the Snowdonia?
Yeah, I've got that Snowdonia thing next week. So that's 100 miles a week on Friday, mate.
Wow. Yeah. How has your training been?
Yeah, it's gone quite well. Like, one thing I've always been good at is training for events. But then, after an event last year, September, I'd done the Dragon's Back. I don't know if you've seen that. That's when you like run down the spine of Wales, basically.
Yeah, I've watched the documentary about it.
Yeah, So I've been lucky to do that twice. And at the end of that one, I was left with a bit of an injury. And it kind of snowballed. Then I got COVID before Christmas. Then my dog died, and that like hit me quite hard, like all of it just at once over Christmas. And I didn't really realize how much, if I'm honest. So when I had this event at the end of January, I'd had some chest issues, not like as in heart issues, but like just from the lingering from COVID. Went into it thinking, I've been doing this so long, I'll just be okay. But it was a nice wake up call, because I wasn't okay. I was like unfit, wasn't ready, did have some breathing issues, and pulled the plug. And that's one of the one times where I've probably given up when I could have carried on. But yeah. I was fine with it. I've had injuries and stuff in races, but I just mentally wasn't there. So then actually off the back of that, I've trained really well up until literally up until last week. Which was just, I just had to be at home with the kids a little bit more, sorting them out. But again, it's like a week in the, and I have to remind this to people I coach as well. So I had to remind myself, it was like a week out of like 12 that hasn't gone that well. And it wasn't like I couldn't run. I was just running like from the house for an hour rather than going out into Snowdonia. So it wasn't like I couldn't run.
Exactly. So I'm like a pretty good block.
I've got no excuses really. It's like, people like me included, we like to look for excuses before one of these things where I'm going to tell myself I've got no excuses this time.
Yeah, you must know the root, like the back of your hand. I think it's interesting though, so I'm really sorry for your loss with your dog as well. I can't imagine how difficult that is. And I think that really highlights how intrinsically linked physical, mental, emotional stress is, and how your body, when it gets like, when you get fried, how your body cannot tell the difference between which is which. Do you know what I mean?
I was slightly tested mentally in that race, and I pulled the plug. And I've been in, and I've finished races. I've finished a race with two broken elbows before and things like this. So I'm like, it was just a clear picture to me. Like my brain wasn't ready more than anything.
Yeah. And you've got to look at the gym out and look at the big picture of the kind of what's the long-term plan. Is perhaps pushing on gonna perhaps potentially damage the success of the key races or whatever it is. Well, that's exciting though. That's super exciting for you.
For next week. Yeah, it is. Then I can have a rest. So what made you choose the 13 ultras, the 13 valleys? How much of it? 60K, did you say?
60K. So I think that. I think it's the five valleys. I think it's five of the.
What's called? Yeah.
Will you edit this?
I can do.
Yeah. Oh, don't worry. I was just going to put it up so I'll get the name right. But
yeah.
Let me see.
I'll do it.
It's five valleys. Yeah.
Five valleys. You're doing five valleys,
Got you. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, I'm doing the five valleys. I picked it because, I mean, I was looking through so many, and a lot of what it was actually the dates originally, because there was loads in the spring. I'm always touring in the spring and August and most of the summer's festivals. So like the final quarter of the year is actually usually always the freest for me with my free time. It's like, it chills out a bit for me then. And also I just come back from a trip in the Lake District and I looked at the kind of route and I saw, I've ran like through one of these valleys, the Troutbeck Valley or whatever it was. And I thought that was beautiful. I absolutely loved every second of it. And this was in January. Probably some of the worst weather I've ever experienced in my life, but I still absolutely fucking loved it. So that it just kind of spoke to me, and I just booked it kind of, on a whim. And now the time has come round where just kind of I need to knuckle down now, really. But just kind of only now I think getting into some more
wanting to do some.
Yeah, some more kind of specific training as well for this one. Whereas kind of I always had in my head up until the tour, I'm just going to get the miles in whichever way I want and just enjoy them. And now I'm having to think about, you know, some more kind of specific training, because I know if anything, I think I'll have the mind for it. And I think I've got the chest for it, but it's just making sure that my legs, I think if anything goes, it'll be my legs. Do you know what I mean? As a result of the hills. So I'm just making sure I'm,
if your legs go before your head, you're all right, I always say.
Yeah, I think so.
That's what I always miss. And when I speak to people, that's why I like speaking to people almost at the beginning of racing, that naivety of just like, almost like throwing yourself in for things, because it's quite rare now, because there's so much choice.
Yeah.
There's so much, like, on social media about what other people are racing and that kind of thing. Ultra races and trail races have always been horrendous at trying to find what is on where and that kind of thing. The websites are always dog shit and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So it's like just having that naivety of going, oh, yeah, just go and do that is a good thing. I would keep that as long as you can. Just don't, whether it scares you or whatever, that's a good thing. Because obviously Brighton Half didn't scare you enough to go and do it.
Yeah, that's fun. Yeah. No, yeah, I like that. I think, yeah, I didn't think about it too much. I just went for it. And I think, I'll try and certainly hold on to that moving forward. I don't want to get too bogged down. I don't have any kind of I don't have any time in mind. Like, I don't, you know, things like that, I don't care about it. It's a challenge for me, for myself. I'm not going into it with any kind of like competitive nature, really. It's just a personal challenge. And I want to get out there and enjoy some of the outdoors. And, hopefully manage to cross the finish line. That's all it is for me.
Good, mate. And you say you've got, like, this is one thing I forgot to ask before. You seem to be prolific at putting out the music. Like, I was going through your Spotify, and, like, well, number one, I was like, Jesus, the numbers are massive, aren't they? And that's just on Spotify, really, for your music. But in terms of listens, but also just the library of songs that you've put out over the years, is it just like, if you got that much like inspiration, or do you just love it that much? And what I was going to say is, because like, that's the other thing with running, it just seems to be such a consistent over 10 years. You've just put them out. I assume for what you both like at that time and what you've been working on, no matter up to almost, maybe you might get this wrong, but whether people like it or not, obviously you care about that. But yeah, you're just doing the music and putting it out.
I think you're nailed on the head. I'm a musician. I have to make music, and if I make music, I want to release it and share it with people. You know, I think, especially as an independent musician, like, I think you have to give people something to enjoy and to consume in a way. We don't have the luxury of like taking years out, and I wouldn't want to either. I think, I love making music, mate. It's what comes naturally to me. It's what I do. It's what I'll always do. And if I'm doing it, it's people are going to hear it. I lost my train of thought. I had time to say it. My brain's gone completely blank.
Just with the consistency and putting it out, is it literally just that, just because you love it and you would be making it probably whether you were, let's turn it around. Like if you were a pro runner, would you still be making music, do you think?
100%. Yeah, 100%. It's just what I do. It's hard to even comprehend not making it, but I appreciate, like, I'm proud of the size of the catalogue of our music. That may be able to kind of consistently deliver it like that, and it never feels forced. And I think the thing is, we never try and sit down, or we really try to avoid from sitting down, like, right, this next record is the fucking one, it has to be the one. It's never been like that, man. It's marginal gains for us, always, like, try and get a little bit better every time we do it. And it's a long game. I'm trying to build a lifelong career.
Because you've got like a real distinctive sound, I think, but also at the same time, because I'll be listening to them, and like I've been listening to Matt Running, and then one will come like completely out of left field, almost like with the sound and the feel of it and that kind of thing. So it's obviously still you two, but yeah, I was like, oh, where did that one come from, kind of thing. And then I have to really listen to the lyrics a bit more. Like all that stuff is great, mate, I think.
Oh, thanks, man. Yeah, I have to... We have to keep it interesting for people. And I think also another bonus of the fact that it's just me and Frankie is we can work very quickly. There's no like, there's not many steps in the process. I make the beat, he writes the lyrics, we record it, we decide as a team that we like it, and we upload it, and it's out. There's not much red tape we have to go through. There's not much relying on lots of different producers and other people to get their shit done on time. We can work very efficiently. We like to work in chunks a lot of the time, so we'll often, a few times a year, we'll book, or maybe once a year, book like a writing trip away. So we'll go, last time we went up to on the Malvern Hills, and we just packed the studio in the back of the car and drive up there into like a, you know, countryside rural retreat and put the studio up, and we'll have like a week of just solid music, and then we'll go away and that, and then we'll add to it and add to it, and kind of like working like that in big chunks, because when we get in our flow, we can really make music quite quickly, I think. It's always been that way, man. I think we know when to kind of continue with an idea, and we know when to knock it on the head. Like, if we're listening to something, if we've got a little idea on the go in the studio, and it's not giving you that feeling in your chest, like this is the best piece of music that anyone's ever made in history, like, then it's not the one, and it should be knocked on the head.
Got you. Yeah, I only missed the end of that. I wish some of the runners I coach would have that mentality of, like, if something's not working or that race isn't working, they should drop it.
Yeah. Man, it's funny, the more we speak, there are a lot of parallels in, I think, my kind of philosophy of music and my kind of how we've done it, as in even in a business sense or in a career sense. There are a lot of parallels to the same way I treat that.
I guess at some point, like now, even like you're only 27, but you've been doing it long enough to go, you almost, because you've been doing it every day and you just kept it consistent, you almost, not that you don't know how you got there, but like sometimes I look back and it's like, I'm very experienced at what I do all of a sudden, and it's like, and then you look back and you just have to back yourself sometimes and go, I've been doing this every day and I've been committed to it. So you got to like be proud of what you've achieved, even though, like you say, you haven't gone out and purposely tried to do massive things overnight. It's just been a grind almost for 10 years.
That's it. Yeah. It's lots of continuous daily decisions and daily actions that over a long time add up, really, isn't it? Like, there has been no defining moment in our career. Like, it's been slow and steady, you know, small wins every day. I think that's, longevity is a really important thing for me in all aspects of life. I don't want to burn fast and bright, which I kind of spent a lot of my younger years with that mindset. Like, when I was younger, like, I genuinely thought, I used to joke around, like, I don't think I'd live past the age of fucking 40, you know what I mean? But deep down, I think I actually like believed it. Like, that idea of longevity never really occurred to me. It's like, why would I play a long game when I, in my brain, I can have everything now? I want everything now. And I've just really flipped that on its head, man, and just tried to let's build something that can last a long time always with us. I want to still be making music many years to come, you know, God willing. Yeah, that's the plan.
Good stuff, mate. Thanks for that. I've kept you for an hour now, but before you go, like, we know what you're doing next in running up until September. Where can we, like, give me some of the, well, I know because I've had a look, but what are some of the festivals you're going to be at over the summer? Is it mainly festivals more than gigs?
Like, so it's festivals now. We just finished our European and UK tour, which is incredible. And now for the rest of the year, it's going to be festivals. We've got lots abroad, Switzerland, Sweden, Netherlands, Austria, Germany. And in the UK, closer to home, we've got a good few as well. Boardmasters, we've got Project Six Festival this month in London. And plus quite a few more that actually haven't been announced yet that I can't say. But yeah, there's a lot of about 15 festivals across the summer. So that's going to be me now, kind of me for the rest of the summer. Leading into that, it's going to be a nice way to juggle the kind of peak, the peak training period of August for that ultra is when I've got like 8 festivals. I don't know how that's going to quite work out, but you know, man, that's what it's all about, isn't it?
So if we see Harvey Gunn just running around the perimeter of these fences.
Yeah, running up and down on stage. Yeah, man. Yeah, it'd be great. Next time we're on the road again, next time we're on the tour, you have to make it down to.
Yeah, I'll come out, mate. Definitely. Yeah.
To Manchester or something. That was a great one last time, man.
Definitely, mate. Yeah, thanks for that. Let me get this right. No, you tell me. What was your Instagram? I know what your Instagram, but let me know. What's the Instagram for you two?
For me and Frankie.
FS and...
And HG, so like the initials, yeah.
Yeah, and website?
FSandHG.com.
And what was your Instagram, mate? Just Harvey Gunn?
Harvey Gunn underscore.
But... Harvey Gunn underscore, like me, I've got Gary House underscore.
Have you? Yeah, some fucker's got it, man. It's one of them when you go on their profile, someone with like zero followers, zero following.
Yeah. Mine's actually like some like American guy who's quite big in like outdoors cooking, so I had no chance.
Oh, really?
Like a legit, he's got a legit account. I was like, shit.
Funny little crossover as well.
Yeah, there's not too many though. If you put in Gary House, I think I could still pop up quite quick.
Yeah,
same with you, I imagine.
Yeah, exactly that. Yeah.
Right, cheers, mate. Thanks a lot for sharing your story, mate. It was really interesting, and good luck with the Five Valleys Ultra, mate.
Oh, thanks a lot, mate. It's a pleasure. Thanks for having me on. And yeah, keep up with the work, man.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.